Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Beat me up on the mamas of all mama shit.
Hey, I'm looking through my telescope and I see a mothership. Is that you? Beam me up.
Hey, DA, I'm thirsty, man. Could you beam me up for a cold one?
Hey, DA, what's going on, baby? Stop me off and beam me up.
DA, what's the silly permission to get in that mothership?
Is my window seat still available? Beam me up.
What's going on, DA? Hey, man, I need you to do me a huge favor. My coworker's a jerk. Oh, just beam me up, man.
Get beamed up. Everyone else has. It's DA on CBS Sports Radio.
And we come to you live for the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. Coming your way in about 18 minutes from now, Leonard Marshall, defensive end of the Giants on two Super Bowl teams in 86 and 90, the Parcells years. Also the guy that hit Montana from the back that ended his Niners career. Is going to join us after the CTE report that came out yesterday that had some startling numbers, to say the least. Hit me up on the phones at 855-212-4CBS. Chris is in Tulsa, listening on 1300 of CBS Sports Radio. What's up, Chris?
What's up, man? Good morning.
Good morning. What's going on?
Hey, it's a pleasure to talk to you.
Back at you, buddy. What's up?
I love the drama in the NBA. I am 36, so I grew up in the best years, in my opinion, watching the 90s players, and I always thought, what if Olajuwon would have teamed up with Paxton and Carmelo, or Stockton and Carmelo? That would have been awesome, you know? What we're seeing now is like what the 90s were. The rest of the league is a D-League for the real league, which is the eight playoff teams that usually have a chance every year. And I want to see super teams. It's been kind of lulled. You had Kobe, and then you had the Spurs, and then you had, you know, these once-in-a-while teams. But I love what we're seeing. That make the competition better. You want to get on a super team, you got to step your game up. And my opinion on McGregor, Mayweather, I train boxing and MMA, a little bit of both. Boxing is more like a chess match. You're counting one, two, three, one, two. MMA is like a chess match on a battlefield. So I think McGregor's not going to stand there and go toe-to-toe like the American Revolution War. You shoot, I shoot. You shoot, I shoot. I think he's going to do Muay Thai style, all these different styles, and just try to switch up Mayweather. If he goes toe-to-toe, yeah, Mayweather's going to destroy him. But if he goes in there like an MMA fight,
how much MMA background can you use in a boxing match?
No, not the MMA. Oh, how much?
What is Connor supposed to do style-wise boxing that's going to be...
around the footwork.
Okay,
Muay Thai style, praying mantis, lotus, all that stuff. Throw different style punches and different looks.
But,
and Mayweather's not going to know how to counter those.
Yeah, but he doesn't have to counter them. He's the greatest defensive boxer maybe ever. He just has to make sure that Connor doesn't land anything.
I'm not saying he's going to win or lose. I'm just saying that's what's going to make this fight. Nobody looks at that aspect of it. When we train MMA, from the moment it starts, you're not thinking of your next move because your arm could get snapped. It's like constant aggression, and that's going to be McGregor's mindset. So I don't see the fight going 12 rounds because McGregor's going to burn out and either get knocked out or land a lucky punch. That's what's going to happen. He's not going to go 12. He can't. MMA is in and out. You're over. You're done. And that's going to be McGregor's approach, and Mayweather's going to have to be like, whoa, and just get more defensive quicker and think faster. And if he lands one, McGregor's going out.
Well, I do think that Mayweather can land one and end it early. And you're right. I do think that Connor could flame himself out early. I think, though, because this has so much hype on it, this has so much attention on it, this has so much money behind it, Mayweather could just soak it for all 12 rounds. You know, that's kind of been his style. Now, granted, he's done that against boxers that are trained to go 12 rounds, but he could just soak this thing, go into total defense mode, as he always does. You never get a punch on him. You never land anything. You never get a clean shot. You never touch him up. And then it just kind of, he soaks it for 12 rounds by playing total defense, prevent defense. But you're right. I mean, it's possible that Connor just totally flames himself out by leaving himself open early. And that's when Mayweather counterpunches and boom, you're done. I just don't think there's any way, whether it's Muay Thai, whether it's dancing around, whether it's any type of MMA background that Connor has, I don't think there's any way that he's going to land even a shot against arguably the greatest defensive boxer ever. You're talking about an amateur boxer at best landing a shot against a historically great defensive boxer. You know, it would be like an Arena Football League quarterback throwing an 80-yard touchdown against the 85 Bears. That's the type of stakes. That's the type of odds stacked against this actually being anything close to competitive. 855-212-4CBS on Twitter, DA on CBS. And as for the crazy offseason that we've seen in the NBA, this stuff has ratcheted the popularity up in the NBA tenfold. I mean, this has never been a league where you had to pay attention to all the crazy offseason maneuvers. But now, the NBA has overtaken the NFL as the most interesting and the most popular offseason. The NFL still has its draft, and we soak so much time into the draft. We spend so much time breaking down all the draft picks. But a lot of that has to do with now college football so much more popular than it had been 20 years ago. The NBA, however, you've got superstars changing teams on an almost weekly basis. In the NFL, that doesn't happen. Aaron Rodgers doesn't force his way out of Green Bay because they lost the NFC title game. I mean, the biggest name that changed this offseason was Adrian Peterson, and that's only because more than half the league didn't want him, including his current team. Could you imagine if Julio Jones losing in the Super Bowl said, I need out, trade me, I want to go somewhere else? This is what's happening in the NBA. It's wild. It's the Wild West, and it's wild to watch. And the NBA has now set itself up so well in the modern sports landscape because, number one, the NBA is a 365-a-year endeavor. Every day there's something going on in basketball. During the season, obviously, the playoffs extend into late June. The moment the playoffs end, the finals end, you've now got free agency starting up. And then the moment free agency starts up, you've got superstars looking to change teams and force their way out. And on top of it, you've got the NBA draft that's got instantaneous marketability when you've got guys like Lonzo Ball coming in, De'Aaron Fox coming into the draft. And coming into the league. It's amazing. Plus, Summer League adds to that. So now we're talking about the NBA 12 months a year, like we do football. Number two, if you want to choose a sport for your son or daughter, but specifically son, because you're talking about football, you're much more comfortable pushing them into basketball than you are into football. And internationally, somebody from China, somebody from Greece, somebody from Albania, somebody from South Africa, somebody from Nigeria, somebody from Russia, everybody, somebody from Japan, they can all gravitate to basketball because it's a global game. So you are now developing fan bases and kids that can play hoops at the NBA level from all corners of the world. We're never getting a Kristaps Porzingis of the NFL from Latvia. You're never getting those types of players that come out of Africa and then come here to the States and play a game or play a season, rather, in high-end college hoops. You're not developing the number one draft pick out of Haiti in the NFL. You just don't have those types of... There's no Dirk Nowitzki in Germany coming here to be an all-time great in the NFL. So that's incredible as well for the NBA. And they also are embracing the fun. And the NFL does such a bad job of that. They've embraced personalities, individuals, and zaniness, and the NFL refuses to go in that direction. They're trying to warm over now the celebrations of the end zones. But the NFL is so stuffy and has been for so long that it's hurting their cause. And who do you trust more as a commissioner? Adam Silver or Roger Goodell? Game, set, match. By the way, the Chicago Cubs win one World Series and suddenly they're getting real greedy.
It's about the money. M-O-N-E-Y-D-A.
Because they play in Wrigleyville amongst all those small rooftops and apartment buildings, for years, the neighborhood has not wanted night Cubs games. Now, this is kind of softened a little bit over the years, but not much. Remember that Wrigley didn't play night games until 1988. They did not install lights at Wrigley until 1988. Unbelievable. And the Cubs, because they want more night games, because they want more revenue, because they want more money from the night games, have requested to the city of Chicago to go lax on the no nighttime policy. Right now, they can only play a handful of night games. They got to play a lot of day games. It's more money to them. Well, the mayor, Rahm Emanuel of Chicago, said no. He said the Cubs chose to trade night concert dates for night baseball game dates. Why did the Cubs do that? Because they didn't have to share the revenue with another team. When you have a night baseball game, you've got to share some of the revenue. We have a night concert. Don't have to share it with the Cardinals. So the Cubs already made their decision. You could have more night baseball games, but you have to have day concerts. They said, no, we want night concerts. And now they're saying, oh, and we want night games as well. And Rahm is saying, no, you made your decision. And it's just amazing that the Cubs, who are one of the most valuable franchises in all of Major League Baseball, have now monetized Wrigley to the utmost degree. They've got new signage. They've also tried to slam the door shut on the rooftops. They have squeezed every dollar out of that place. They've added seats, renovations, new facilities. The Cubs have won a World Series. The Cubs, oh, by the way, last offseason, could overspend by like $50 million to get Jason Hayward. He's basically a bum the entire season, comes in as a pinch hitter or a defensive replacement of the World Series. They could sign Zobrist, Hayward, Lackey, Lester, spend all of this money, more than anybody else can spend, maybe outside of the Dodgers or the Yankees, and now are again saying, yeah, but we need more money. Yeah, we need more night games. Yeah, we want night concerts. We need night games to be competitive. To be competitive, this is not about a Royals franchise or a Pirates franchise that has to draft everybody, develop everybody, and can't spend more than maybe, you know, a couple million dollars in the offseason. This is about one of the wealthiest franchises in all of baseball in the third largest city in America with a ballpark that just pumps out money, that has sellouts all the time, and they won the World Series, and they spend whatever they want in free agency, saying we need more. Need more night games. How could we be competitive? Man, the Cubs went from lovable losers to arrogant, greedy winners overnight. Overnight. There was nothing unlovable, unless you were a Cardinals fan, about the Cubs or a White Sox fan. Today, most of the league hates the Cubs. 855-212-4CBS. Twitter, DA on CBS. We'll jump back into your calls. Also, Leonard Marshall on yesterday's CTE report. He played 15 years in the NFL. Get his thoughts on the startling numbers that came out yesterday. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
Now get zapped while the sun is out.
Good morning, DA. You know what, my friend? I love you to death, because if there's one thing that I've learned from listening to you, is you stick to it.
DA on CBS Sports Radio.
Remember, you can always stream the show using the CBS Sports app, the TuneIn app, the radio.com app, or on Apple Music, or watch us on your phone as well at watchda.com. Well, the CTE study done by Boston University in the Journal of the American Medical Association, which was released the other day, was startling to say the least. Nearly 90% of brains studied from football players, these were deceased football players ranging from high school to the NFL, 90% of those brains had CTE in them, including 110 of the 111 brains from former NFL players. It included college players, semi-pro players, CFL players, and high school players. But of the NFL, 110 of 111 had CTE found in their brains. Joining us is a guy that was a multiple-time All-Pro and Pro Bowler on the defensive line for the New York Giants. He won two Super Bowls with the Giants, laid one of the most iconic hits in NFL history on Joe Montana, the 1990 NFC Championship game. And that is Leonard Marshall joining us here on the program. Leonard, good morning.
Good morning, fellas. How are you guys this morning?
Doing well, man. Thanks so much for joining us. Let me just start with your reaction to the report that came out the other day. What was your reaction when you saw those numbers?
I was, wow. You know, but then again, I kind of knew from talking to Ann McKee and my new buddy, Chris Nowinski, at the Concussion Legacy Foundation.
Is it scary?
Very scary. Very scary. Each time I think about it, I think about the erratic behavior amongst players. I think about some of the issues and phone calls I've received over the last 15 to 17 years, how they've impacted my life, my thinking, the thought process. And those I've tried to help. A couple of them are deceased. And then again, there's guys like myself that didn't want to believe until it was proven and became factual in terms of my wellness and my ability to cope with traumatic brain injury after football.
How have you been since you retired, health-wise?
Well, I've been okay. You know, my thing was, you know, I started having some issues around 07, and then, you know, I did some things about it. I started writing a book. I started talking to players and teammates. I started doing some research. You know, one thing led to another. You know, I met some great guys at a couple of companies. One of them in particular is Elixinol, which I'm not only an equity owner but brand ambassador for. And, you know, Elixinol has changed my life.
It is organic European hemp tested for the highest purity and potency. It's an oil drops, CBD oil drops. How has Elixinol saved your life?
Well, not saved it, but changed it.
Changed
it. You know, the one thing about CTE, it won't cause you to die. It'll cause you to spiral downward in terms of your thought process, especially when it comes to your emotions, you know, personal wellness, your ability to think positively, you know, the COVID life, the transition, PTSD, things of that nature. But I think the fact that I discovered hemp and the uses of hemp, I think has done wonders for me. I know for a fact it's helped me with the way I think, the way I get along with life during the course of the day, my PTSD situation, my sensitivity to light, my ability to focus, man. Focus has gotten so much better. You know, the past 2 years I've participated in some of the conferences associated with CBD, you know, and the fact that Elixinol is the largest producer of hemp and CBD in the world makes it all good, because we do the research. You know, we have the doctors on staff that have made a banishing commitment to making Elixinol a household name company.
Leonard Marshall joins us, multiple-time All-Pro and Pro Bowler, two-time Super Bowl champion. So were you emotionally going down that spiral? Did you feel depressed? Did you ever have suicidal thoughts? How was your brain before you got on Elixinol?
Oh, no doubt. No doubt. I mean, like I said, I started having issues in 06, 07, 08. I started to do some things about it, started doing some research, you know, talking to players, getting phone calls from players, players saying to me, man, I got this issue. I don't know what's going on. I don't like the way I'm thinking these days. I'm fighting with my wife. I'm fighting with my child. You know, the least little stressor that comes my way, I get a little goofy. You know, I drive to the mall and don't know why. I drive to the grocery store, forget why. You know, I get there with a list of stuff and don't know where I put it. You know, I have these issues with light in the morning. I don't sleep well at night. I'm restless. You know, all these issues all came to light. And, you know, no evidence of truth to deal with it or a way to try to deal with it until guys start discovering, you know, CBD.
What do you think?
And the usage of CBD.
What do you think about the attempts for football to get safer? Do you think that we can eliminate some of these problems down the road from players? Do you think that it's always going to happen that you play a violent sport like this and you're going to end up with brain trauma?
You know, guys, it's tough. I mean, the head is the headgear, and the head itself is a very pivotal device that's used to play football. You tackle with it, you block with it. You have to see what you hit. You can't, you know, bow your neck up because you'll break your neck. So the one thing I think that we can do is start at the bottom, start at the kids level, the 6 to 12 level. Teach them how to practice in the game. Teach them how to play the game. You know, take some of the violence out of the game and the use of the headgear at an early age. There's an organization called Practice Like Pros, which I'm part of, that's spearheaded by Terry O'Neill, former NBC executive, and Buddy Tevens, head football coach at Dartmouth. Dartmouth has played football like this for the last 12 years. Of the last 12 years, they've won 11 championships doing this. They're teaching other people how to do this. I think adopting new policies at the USA Football and policy and procedure as it relates to the way they teach kids, I think vetting the process for those who teach kids how to play football. I think you've got a lot of these Monday morning quarterbacks or these frustrated athletes that are coaching these kids that have these personal vendettas that they look to sow while teaching kids how to play the game, and that's not too cool to do that because you're teaching kids bad stuff. You know, you're teaching kids how to leg whip and some of the bad techniques to play this game, and that's not too cool. So I think if you get some of those clowns out the way and you clean up the game, and you clean up the game by starting with those who teach kids how to play the game, I think you can make it a little bit safer. I'm not going to say it'll be the safest game in the world, but they'll make it safer.
Leonard Marshall, our guest here on the show, are you worried at all about a ticking time bomb in your brain and at some point things going haywire?
God, I'm always worried. I'm always worried because it's always going to be in the back of my mind that, you know, I'm one of those guys. I mean, I worry about Tony Dorsett. I worry about Joe DeLamalo. I worry about Mark Duper. I worry about those that have been diagnosed in other places. I worry about guys I played with. I mean, I played with some great guys, and some of these guys are very strong, confident men. You know, the biggest problem with football players is they're not scared. What's the problem with being so strong and real proud men and the kind that won't tell you that we're injured? Well, I'm going to soften up and tell you, I've got a problem. If you think you can help me, reach out to me. If you know you're wasting my time, stay the hell away from me.
Leonard Marshall, our guest here on the show, you can check him out on Twitter at LeonardMarsha7D, so without the two L's, 7-0, his number when he played in the NFL. Elixinol is the brand that he's a brand ambassador for. Two-time Pro Bowler, two-time All-Pro, two-time Super Bowl champion as well, played more than a decade in the league in the 80s and 90s. Leonard, it's always fun when we get to catch up. Unfortunately, this is not the most fun subject, but I always appreciate your perspective, man. Thanks so much.
Fellas, thank you so much, and I appreciate it, and I hope that you continue to follow this story.
Leonard Marshall, our guest here on the show. Worried about Tony Dorsett, worried about Joe DeLaMalore, Mark Duper, all those guys. Those are his contemporaries. Those are guys he played with, and those are guys that have gone through significant brain problems and emotional distress. And look, there's one thing you have to remember about this study, and that is there is no test for the living for CTE. So it has to be brains that are harvested from those that have passed away. Well, the brains that are harvested from those that passed away are almost always going to be from families that assume something was wrong. I mean, if a football player had no health issues and then just died of a heart attack or simply died of old age or whatever, that brain is probably not getting donated to science at Boston University looking for CTE. So naturally, I think the percentage is going to be high because the brains that were donated are likely targeted for that type of stuff. However, you cannot escape the hard numbers on this, and that is that 110 out of 111 NFL players' brains had CTE. 7 of 8 Canadian Football League players, CTE. 48 of 53 college players, CTE. But only 3 in 14 high school players. The percentage went down the younger you were or the less football you played. The percentage went up the more football you played at a higher level. The fact is, CTE probably isn't a disease that's going to affect everybody that plays at a youth level. But the longer you play and the higher level you play, the more at risk you absolutely are because you've had more bruises to your brain, more trauma to your brain as you've gone on in your life. And there's no doubt, man, this stuff is bleeping scary. And even Leonard Marshall admitting it is scary when we get numbers like this. When we come back here on the show, your sound check, your best audio of the day, including Michael Phelps defending the Great White Hoax. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
It's the show about the show. Here's the best of this week's Permission Granted podcast.
That's on Pete, because Pete knew.
Yeah.
So now I wonder, did Pete just want, he had too much on his plate handling Gio and Jones and you, and he just wanted one less thing to have to upload? Possibly?
It might be, because remember, 2 weeks ago you guys did the PGP, and Velotti was beside himself that I didn't take those vacation days off, and he just wanted me not to even be doing the show from Casey.
Good point.
Download the PGP today on iTunes and play.it, or listen at daoncbs.com and the show's Facebook page, Zap Zap.
I highly encourage you to download this week's Permission Granted podcast, the show about the show. It's explosive, to say the least. There's a couple of other words I would use to describe it, but I think you just got to go there and listen. I would say just get to about the 12 to 13 minute mark, and at some point you'll be blown away. 855-212-4CBS, and on Twitter, DA on CBS. You can find that in the iTunes, on the normal DA show feed, or its own iTunes feed, the PGP. It's also available at daoncbs.com. Michael's in Abilene, Texas, listening on 98.1 of CBS Sports Radio. What's up, Mike?
Morning, DA. How we doing?
Doing well, man. Good morning to you. What's up?
Thank you, sir. Let's start with the beam up.
All right.
Man, one of the callers a second ago was talking about the super teams and how he was a fan of them. I got to say, I am too. There's a lot of speculation on it lately because of the Warriors, and I think it's good for the league. There's a lot of drama in the league right now, and that's caused a spike in you know, people watching. I'm not a Kevin Durant fan. I'm not a Steph fan. I'm actually a LeBron fan. I was not mad when KD went to the Warriors. I knew, I was like, wow, that's a great team, man. If, you know, if someone can beat this team, then that's just going to be that much more of an accomplishment. So I think it's good for the league, man. There's so many good players in the league. There's not a large number of elite players, and I think that's the ultimate downfall with the league right now. You know, there's a handful of elite, and the rest, to me, you know, if you're not elite, you're really not making that much noise. So to me, there's maybe 10 players in the league that are just at this stage that no one else is. But each year, it seems like we get a couple more. We get more of these athlete hybrid players that maybe not the best basketball players, but they're great athletes.
Yeah, let me jump in there. I think that super teams are not necessarily the bad thing for the NBA. As we've always had, the most interesting teams are the ones with the greatest collections of talent. And while the Boston Celtics of the 80s or the Showtime Lakers or the Bulls of the 90s had incredible amounts of talent, they were not considered super teams because they were not kind of created in a lab. I think that's the issue now that people are dealing with. It's that these are not organically built and drafted teams. These are squads that are getting together with just the mere collection of talent trumping all with guys in their prime. But I'm with you. I don't think that super teams are the thing in the NBA that are bad. The thing that's bad is if you have one team that cannot be toppled. And we'll wait and see if that is the Warriors. Because if the Warriors don't lose in the Western Conference playoffs again and then beat whoever else, whether it's the Cavs again in five or the Celtics in five or whatever, people are going to get sick of that real quick. It's fine to have great collections of talent. It's fine to have this arms race in the NBA. It makes things, no doubt, interesting. I mean, who doesn't want to see how Paul George and Russell Westbrook work together in OKC? Who doesn't want to see how Harden and Chris Paul work together in Houston? Who wouldn't want to see if Carmelo went to Cleveland to team up with LeBron and or Kyrie? People want to see how Jimmy Butler in Minnesota with Karl Anthony Towns and Wiggins works. But if you have one team that basically can't be beat, then it renders everything else irrelevant and people are going to get real sick of that. So this is the real test. Did any of these teams close the gap on the Warriors? Because if we go through an entire season again and the Warriors win 70 games and go, you know, 15 or 16 and 1 in the playoffs, it won't be that cool no matter what the off seasons feel like or look like. By the way, before your travels begin, prepare for summer road trips. Visit O'Reilly Auto Parts for simple, preventable maintenance that will ensure a safe journey during the summer months ahead. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. Sound check time.
CBS presents this program in color.
An educated person can't think he's going to get a recruit by strippers coming in.
They can fire you, but they can't eat you.
And they run through our ass like through a tin horn, man, and we could not stop them.
The audio you need to hear. It's DA Soundcheck.
Owner of the Cavaliers, Dan Gilbert, introducing his new GM, Kobe Altman, yesterday and taking a subtle jab at David Griffin, his old GM.
I can't tell you how important it is to have these kinds of relationships around the league. What's a little bit surprising, even, you know, for me, I've been doing this 12 years now, I guess, but as an owner, is that how many deals in the league actually get done because of there's relationships between the front office of our franchise and another one. You know, because sometimes there'll be a trade or something that happens and we'll say, did we even get in a bat? Did we get in a bat to it? Did we talk to them? It's not like a team who's about to make a deal with one team says, well, let me go onto some kind of auction site and see if there's other NBA teams who could give me a better deal. It's a lot of this is relationship driven, and what we have here is one of the best relationship guys in the league, and I think you can feel that and see that, and I think you will see much of that.
Was that a shot at his old GM David Griffin? Perhaps he was just feeling like they've been left out of a lot of deals, and he would feel like that no matter what because buddies trade with buddies. So I understand the rationale here, if that's true, that Altman is one of the best relationship guys in the league. I totally understand frustration that would mount if you're not even in on a deal because somebody has a good relationship with somebody else and then they just kind of shut everybody else out. But I think that also Dan Gilbert talks too much. And Dan Gilbert yesterday talked about how they were really close to getting Paul George and that Indiana didn't get the most back for Paul George. And then about the relationship thing. I mean, Dan Gilbert just needs to realize when to shut up. He couldn't shut up after LeBron left. He can't shut up now. And he better hope that Kobe Altman works out, because there was a huge hole in the offseason when they needed a general manager and stability. And now they're picking up the pieces. And if the whole thing with the Cavaliers blows up in their face, you can point directly to their owner being an idiot and a miser when it comes to their general manager. Adrian Beltre had an interesting moment last night. He was swinging and preparing kind of outside of the on-deck circle. Hey, do you guys have NFL Network on the other side of the glass?
We do not at the moment.
Okay, if you could flip it over, because they have some type of thing on Kurt Warner. Oh, maybe it's just over right now. And it was completely distracting because Kurt Warner's wife's hair is wild. Absolutely wild. What it looked like was she had shaved the sides of her head and then grown her hair, obviously like natural long, but remember she had the really short hair, so this was really, really long, and it was like a mohawk wave cockatoo coming up over her head and splashing down behind. It was like if you had, I don't know, this huge mop of hair.
Like the Rams logo was her hair?
And it was a little bit like the Rams logo, yeah. And her sides were totally shaven, and it came up like a water slide. It was like elevated high on her head and back down the back. I'd never seen that. Kurt Warner's, is that Brenda Warner?
I believe.
Just so, going bonkers with the hair.
So the hair is something to keep an eye on at the Hall of Fame inductions next weekend.
No doubt. I'm telling you, I'm scouting this right now. I fancy myself as a scout. You have to look for Brenda Warner's hair. This was outrageous. I got to try to find a screenshot for you guys. I couldn't believe it. It totally threw me off. What was I talking about?
I don't know, but I think we have a Michael Phelps cut to get to.
No, Adrian Beltre.
Oh, okay, that's right.
Stay with me, Mraz.
All right.
So Beltre was warming up in the on-deck circle. Ump is like, hey, man, get closer to the on-deck circle. You're not in the on-deck circle. Beltre yanks the on-deck little rug towards him instead of moving towards the rug. And then because of that, a little too snarky, a little too cute, Adrian Beltre gets tossed.
This second umpire came down, and he told me I need to move. And I tell Gary, I have no problem, but I want to get hit. I've been hit when I stand over there. So he goes, well, I don't care. You need to be on top of the mat. Okay, so I pulled the mat where I was at, and he threw me out.
Seems pretty simple, huh? When you describe it like that, seems pretty simple. Adrian Beltre is a future Hall of Famer. Can we let the guy swing his bat where he wants to swing? Do we have to be such curmudgeons about being in the on-deck circle? He was like 7 inches outside, maybe a foot outside the normal on-deck circle. I mean, come on. There was also that delay the other night for 18 minutes in the Twins game, and nobody knows why it was delayed. The umps like couldn't figure out some type of, I don't know. Nobody knows what was happening. Nobody could understand why it was delayed. Look at a baseball game being delayed because a guy's not in the on-deck circle officially, getting tossed, and 18 minutes. 18 minutes. Imagine sitting in that stadium for 18 minutes and nobody can describe why it's being delayed. It wasn't weather. It was some type of rules or substitution bit. I mean, it was ridiculous. And finally, Michael Phelps defending his quote-unquote racing of a great white.
We did mention everything up front, James. Some people just decide not to listen to some of the things that we do, and that's not my fault that you don't do that. It's pretty easy to open up your ears and listen to either what the TV is saying, what announcers are saying, or what I'm saying in interviews.
Love it. Love it. He's right. Now, I don't know if they completely promoted, hey, this is a fake CGI shark. He's not really racing. Don't tune in. They built the hype. But Phelps is right. All you had to do was search once on the internet to see if it was a real race, and you would realize, oh, no, wait. It's a computer graphic that he's quote-unquote racing. So I don't feel bad for anybody that got duped. Mraz got duped. I don't feel bad for you at all.
Again, I didn't think he was going to be next to a great white, but I thought we'd actually have a great white getting timed and raced in a different part of the water than Michael Phelps. And for him to act like all we have to do is open up our ears. I mean, get serious, Phelps. What interviews were we listening to of Michael Phelps leading into this? Were we glued to Ellen DeGeneres' show to hear Michael Phelps on it? Hey, who is he kidding? Nobody heard him say this.
Do one Google just think for your... Think
so now I got to Google. They're going to sell me a bill of goods, and now I got to get on my phone and Google and make sure I'm being sold the
proper
thing.
You know what you need to do? You need to think for yourself and actually use that wet noodle that's in the middle of your skull.
So why advertise, then, if all we have to do is think for ourselves?
Why did I and Andrew Bogish not watch?
Because you knew it wasn't going to be. But you
exactly.
But did you know that Michael Phelps had said it wasn't going to be? Because that's what he's saying.
Katie Linendahl was here in studio, and she said it's not going to be a real race. Again, this is a person with a brain. You are not.
I was on vacation. I was cut off from everything. I come back. I'm expecting Michael Phelps to race a great white, and I didn't get it.
It's your fault. Stupidity is your fault.
No, it's Michael Phelps' fault. Fallacies.
Your fault. Take some responsibility. We'll talk Pac-12 college football with our friend Yogi Roth from Pac-12 Media Days coming up here next. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.